When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
You've been working as a doula for some time now.
Just over 2.5 years now, I think, professionally. So I wandered into the world of support a while ago. I've graduated as a Quiddy breastfeeding counsellor. I went into that, into the volunteer position, because it's something that I found I needed. You know, groups of moms having realistic, honest conversations. And it really, really captured my heart quite quickly, actually. I'll never forget my first morning. And so I kind of navigated myself in there, and I really submerged myself into the group, to the point that I went back to work pretty early on Juno. And one of the kind of the clinchers for my returning to work into the restaurant business was that I wouldn't work Thursday mornings, because that's when my Quiddy group was on with all my moms. And so then from there, I really found a space that I became really passionate about, the volunteering aspect. And so trained then as a breastfeeding counsellor myself. And one of my friends, a great friend of mine, tapped me on the shoulder and said, "This is really your bag, isn't it?" And I said, "Yeah, it's the moms." So it's not, you know, babies are deadly, right? Babies are deadly. And I love babies. However, for me, the support that gets forgotten about so much is what I found in Quiddy, and that experience of shifting that support onto the mother and finding out, because breastfeeding support, as you'll know yourself, it's so much more than latch and position. So then I got this tip on my shoulder to say, you know, there's this other thing that you might, and you hear these words, people say, what's that? And so one of the women in our organization said, you know, maybe you should look at this postpartum doula work. It's something that I think might really, really suit you. And lo and behold, I looked it up and I said, oh yeah, this is my bag. This is exactly. Now I, you know, I'm an ex-hospitality person. And before that I was a town planner. It's about finding and offering solutions. And I just, I loved it. That room, that woman, I trained under an amazing woman called Annie Grauer. And everything about it spoke to me, about what we can do as support people to empower parents on their journeys. And to, you know, to allow these new families to tune into their gut instincts. Because oftentimes we're so caught up with what does the book say and what does the app say that we forget. We really know our babies better than anybody else, you know, and if there's something askew, or if there's something amiss, or if, you know yourself, Alex, if it doesn't feel right, it usually isn't right. And that is the same with parenting and new babies.
So by your definition, what makes a doula unique in terms of healthcare service and support?
A doula, in terms of its old linguistic history, where it comes from, it's a mother's supporter, a woman's helper, mothering the mother, all these beautiful pieces of phraseology. And that's exactly what it is, except in modern times it's kind of been extended a bit more, because there's a lot more to our parenting and to our mothering. And you know, a doula is about being a person who's invited into a family or a person's home and minding them in their transition, be it, you know, a baby being born or the loss of a baby. You know, there's other doulas who work in the world of fertility. That's not one of the sides that I've gotten into yet. It's something that I'd love to train into a lot, as you know, always training, always learning. And I think that there is a space for a non-familial, confident who can provide you with non-judgmental support and compassionate care. And I think in that, Alex, I think that a doula, because they come in without the history and the baggage of a relationship that might be there already, a question or a question that you might ask a doula, the response isn't loaded with what they did in their own journey. Our ultimate goal is to provide non-judgmental, evidence-based support. So just because I parent my child one way doesn't mean that that might be the best fit for you. You know, I don't need the kudos of saying, well, I did this, so you should do this. It's actually, well, here's all the range of options. What do you think might suit you best? And let's reflect on that. And if that doesn't work, let's open up into a bit more flexibility and see what else might be there as an alternative to that option. If that thing isn't really floating your boat at the moment or whatever it is that's going on, you know, and the emotional response then as well is such a huge part of the work that a doula does. We're a bit like the barmen of old, right? But you know, you might go in and you pull up a chair and you might have your newspaper and you might have a pint or a cup of coffee, and then you might tell that barman your woes and off you go on your journey, and that's it. We're secret keepers and we're emotion keepers, because you know, the stuff that happens bedside, again, with the baby being born or in loss, those conversations are some of the most vulnerable conversations that a person might ever have in their lives. And I suppose all of us, and in particular, the real piece is the trust and respect that needs to be given to those conversations and stories. So again, like that, middle aisle of Tesco's, oh, Jesus, do you remember? You're not really, it's not really what it's about, you know? If somebody wanted to bring something up with you again, for sure, you'd arrange that and you schedule it, and let's make a time and a date and let's absolutely schedule this conversation because it's important.
There's a bit of a modern Irish attitude to that that says it's private and you shouldn't talk about it to anybody else and you should just get on with it on your own, and because that's what everyone else is doing. But everyone else isn't doing that.
No, like, they're not.
They're not really, and nobody's expected to do that. That was the big thing that I had to learn, because we were talking earlier on about being busy in our jobs and being solutions focused and getting on with it and ticking boxes. And if you're used to living that kind of life and being quite independent in that, when you have a baby, your default is to behave like that and not to reach out and say, I actually don't have a rashers how to do this. Yeah. Or no, like all of these things can be talked through in a really private way.
Yeah.
Or in any way. And also what you were saying about options as well, about providing options. So it's like this amazing confidant that also has an encyclopedia of options. Like,
yeah.
So,
and that we're trained to listen, right? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You're trained to listen. So you can be totally honest because it's non-judgmental.
Yeah, yeah. And non-biased. And like that, the landscape is really changing, I think, Alex. And I think it's really fair to say that the story and the sharing of stories, and it's not just, ah, come on, sure, you're grand. Haven't you got a healthy baby? Aren't you fine? You know, it's actually much more than that. And there's much more honesty in the landscape and the paradigm now, a new parenthood and new motherhood, of people willing to share these really hard experiences, because new motherhood is isolating and lonely at the best of times. Add into that mix a big old pandemic. And life has gotten really, really hard, really, really quickly, yeah, and really isolating really quickly. You know, we train and learn for everything. And why not start that and begin that in our parenting journeys and try and see how we can have people to hold our hand. And that's really, you know, in terms of what the postpartum work is about.
I would love us to cast our minds back to March, as all of those announcements were being made. So many women and families had to adapt their expectations. In your view, this caused a lot of anxiety and disappointment, like huge amount of disappointment.
Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about this from your professional experience?
Sure. Well, immediately it became apparent that the regular anxiety experience and uncertainties that mothers and new parents are facing in birth anyway. And then we had this immediate response of, we can't do what we are used to doing. And like, you know, from a professional perspective, it was a Thursday afternoon and I immediately offered my client the options to continue in-home support or to do it virtually. And then like that, there was an immediate response in my head to say, this is going to have a huge impact. I suppose because I'm not in this world of supporting parents, you know, for a couple of months or a year, you understand what these decisions and policies and the impact they can have and the impact that birthing in different circumstances can have on families. And so, you know, I very quickly put into the conversation there earlier just now about being trained to active listen. And Alex, my immediate response was to go off to another person, and thankfully this other person in the UK moved their trainings online immediately, because she knew what I was asking was correct, and she felt it as well, because she works in the birth world work, and updated my own skill set on trauma-informed care immediately in March.
Wow.
So this training that I was going doing was supposed to be in the UK just outside of London in November this year, and I had signed up to go for it, which was going to be over two weekends over in the UK. And this other person said, okay, I'm going to put this online and I'm going to do it now. So sign up and let's get on with this, because this is real and this is happening. And I suppose for those of us to see that, even if that initial period of, you know, how the maternity units and service, I'm going to use the word service users. So that's anyone who was starting their reproductive journey to pregnancy, being pregnant or having a baby.
Yeah.
How those decisions immediately impacted. So for instance, if you were about to have your baby in March, and I don't want to be speaking for, this is stuff that I've heard in, you know, virtual client calls or at the coffee morning that I'm running. So all of these people had done all of their antenatal classes with their partner, with the intention of having a birth partner available to them. And immediately those people were not able to do that with the person who they had put their trust and their learning skills with to have their babies.
Yeah.
Like, just think about that for a minute. And so you have to do it by yourself. And the fallout of that is going to be long felt, you know, to those of us in this work. It's real and it's a lived experience, and that it's continuing, and there is a huge anger, and it's an absolute understandable response of, you know, the asking the policymakers, why are we continuing this? Because a doula is trained to think to evidence-based information. And when we look at the evidence, and I understand what the maternity units are doing and the policymakers are doing, and I can understand it's for the protection and all of that. However, the incidence rate doesn't seem to be there in the hospitals. And so we have to ask the questions. It is our place as advocates for birthing people to ask these questions and to push it and to keep pushing it, you know? And really, the ultimate response is hopefully that we get some understanding and some lessening of restrictions sooner rather than later. Because, you know, whilst you can say, oh, this could happen and this could happen, it's not only your experience, it's your partner's experience as well. And if you think about, like, those people in March and April going in, and, you know, listening to one woman in particular the other day, and my heart was, I was just breaking listening to her. You know, she'd gone in, she had been hoping for a natural birth, things happened, then it was the induction, ultimately there was a cesarean section, and she's by herself, right?
Yeah.
But then when you think about it, her partner then isn't there in the ward to hand over the baby when the baby needs a feed. They must be so busy in the hospitals and the maternity units, because the partners haven't been replaced on the ground
with
anyone else, right? And the partner support. And, you know, as a doula, we go in and out. Generally, we go in. We are not visitors. The partners are not visitors. They are birth partners. We are trained professionals. And, you know, I work alongside enough midwives that they would say, they see the doula come and they go, oh, there's the emotional piece, there's the physical support, I can get on with my job. And we've all been removed and not been replaced, because already our maternity system was understaffed, right? And underfunded and all of the rest of that. And so, you know, there's this woman and her newborn baby, and she's trying to feed her baby, but, you know, she's just had a section, so she can't really get out. So it's really hard for these people. There's a lot to it. And then there's the partners. Now, on the flip side of that, I will say, because it's not all doom and gloom, Alex, right?
Yeah.
The other side of that is our baby's birth weights are increasing back up to where they should be within 2 weeks at a faster rate than they had been previously. And things like our breastfeeding rates are incrementally increased. Like, we have got one of the poorest breastfeeding rates in the world. And our initiation rates are up slightly. And this might be to do with the lack of busyness of that new parent having just had their baby. They've got more time to be under the baby. They don't have to be waiting for their visitors. So
yeah.
So a lot of people are reporting actually that whilst all of this is happening in the very traumatic side of things and the very heavy experiences that people are feeling, there's also the positive element of, well, I've nowhere to go and I've nothing to do. So I may as well be here. And really walking into that fourth trimester as a positive experience to counteract nearly what's happened in their birth experience. Now, it doesn't take away or negate what's happened.
Yeah.
You know, but there are less people coming to homes and there are less visitors. So there is less, you know, let's bounce back situation. It's really less, you know, my outlook is, well, let's resume lying in. Let's get back to bed. Let's get back into our fourth trimesters and get under our babies. Ask for people to leave out the laundry. Ask your mum or your dad or your person who might have otherwise come in and done other things for you. You know, let's look at creating these postpartum plans specific to right now in 2020 with what we're living with.
Yeah.
You know, and let's look to how we can access supports differently and how we can tune into what the benefits are. And then let's talk about your experience and let's talk, you know, with trauma-informed care. Let's debrief from that experience. Let's look at that, really actively figure out how you felt about that. Because if we speak about it and if the tears come, they're very cathartic.
Yeah.
You know, there's real space for tears in this whole experience that's been lived. And I can't imagine what they must be going. Like, I can empathize, sure. What I would say to all people who are about to have a baby, you know, plan for the stuff that is going to be with flexibility going into it, is look at all the different things, you know, and day to day, that's the thing, day to day, the restrictions or impotence, they were different every single day. So if a client was going in to have their baby, we were nearly, you know, speed dial one, straight into the units, what's happening today? And there's 19 maternity units in the country and they're all having different policies. That's the thing that's really bending our minds as doulas, right?
That's really important to say. So to recap, the real casualties of the COVID-19 situation are those mothers that went in March, April, May, when it was such an unknown landscape and the restrictions were so severe for those women. There was really no choice but to just, you know, hand themselves over and be in a situation where that nobody expected. I feel like the general consensus now is that we've adapted. So women who have had their babies in the last couple of months and who are going to have their babies, there's a bit more of an awareness about how things roll.
Except there's an entire other group, Alex, that really, really bore the brunt of this. And it's people who were on their fertility journey and people who were experiencing loss. And that continues. We really need to give space to conversation of the people who were about to embark on IVF journeys that were immediately stopped. And those people in the saddest of circumstances as well, who, you know, think about that they had to go into hospital to have a scan by themselves. And they might have heard those words, there is no heartbeat. And then they might have had to call their partner who was out in the car. And, you know, for somebody who works in bereavement, you know, it's part and parcel of the work that I do. For a person to have to say those words ever before they're ready, but that they have to give that information to potentially the partner of that baby to be over a phone call by themselves, you know, standing by themselves in a corridor. Now, the midwives are exceptionally beautiful people, you know, and they will give you time and they will give you space. However, that's not the same as having your partner beside you, holding your hand, you know, a touch on your knee, all of these things. And again, that those people who had built up to taking their fertility treatments and all of those appointments overnight closing down.
Yeah.
You know, and so that whole piece of that baby boom, you know, 2021, my heart just broke for all of those people, because unless you had your treatment by April 2020, there was not going to be a baby in 21. And that was a really forgotten about group of people.
So many heartbreaking stories, really. I hope that a lot of people are finding the support that they need to get through this time. But for people who don't know that there is support out there, who's around? Who can they... Who's accessible right now?
I suppose the thing about it is that any of us who work in this type of world generally most of us in Ireland are face-to-face type of people, right? And overnight, we needed to figure this stuff out. Actually, thankfully, both of my clients that I was supporting at the time in March, both of them decided they would like to transfer onto virtual work. And that only came back on the Monday. And actually, the relief that I felt, we were sitting there and I was going, okay, so I just switch on to virtually and I put a quick post up on Instagram. I had been out with a pal down in Belmont, down in Bray, and I took, there was a double rainbow as it happened, and I just took this photograph and I said, right, it will be okay. It will be okay. We're going to switch to virtual. And then I went, holy shit, I've no idea how to do this.
Yeah.
And so,
yeah.
And so I'm not really a techie person, really. My doula organization that I've trained with, Donut, they responded really, really well. And they did these check-in calls, leadership check-in calls. Mm. And one of the nights there's an email came in and it said, so we're going to do a webinar with Penny Simkin. They're going to teach the birth doulas how to doula virtually. And I says, ah, sure, I'll sign up to that. You'll definitely learn something, right?
Yeah.
And so 1,000 people signed up to this.
Whoa.
So that was at 7 o'clock. I logged in to go. And at 8:05, there was, and we had kept, you know, the Zoom in the background. It just keeps rolling around. And then an email came in and said, unfortunately, we have not been able to take up the amount of people. Our web service has pretty much cracked because 1,000 people signed up.
Wow.
And in that moment, though, Alex, I said, okay, well, if Penny Simkin can go to do a webinar. So she is, if you don't know who she is one of the thought leaders in the birth doula world. Mm. And I had a real moment of, check yourself. If she can do that and it cannot work, and then she can just take it on the chin and go, we'll try again tomorrow night.
Yeah.
I had been playing with this idea in the back of my head and I thought, okay, we're going to do this. So the following day, myself and my pals in our various homes signed up to all the different platforms. And you might remember, it seems like years ago now, but at the very beginning then, there was all these beautiful calls getting hacked and things happening that weren't really supposed to happening in the places where they weren't supposed to be happening. So I wanted to ensure that there was safety to conversations, because things can be very private and personal when you're doing this. So anyway, between the jigs and the reels of it, I decided, okay, I'm going to launch this virtual coffee morning.
What was the main objective for the coffee morning? What was the...
For me, I immediately saw all of the groups on the ground. So we're talking, whether you're breastfeeding or bottle feeding your baby, all of those mother support play groups, you know, your local hall, your local library, they all disappeared immediately, as did your gymboree, your yoga classes, everything just went. And I was like, oh my God, they've nowhere to be.
Yeah, so it was focused on really postpartum women and their babies.
It was about providing people with peer support, a conversation place,
yeah,
somewhere to go to have a conversation. And one of the girls put it perfectly one of the days. And we have talked on this group, and I never expected, where are we? We're September. So this started in April. And it was Monday mornings and Friday mornings from 10 a.m. until, jeepers, sometimes until 2 in the afternoon. And we have talked about every single thing you could talk about in motherhood, parenting, personal life, partnerships, relationships, sexuality, sex, lack of sex. And one of the girls just said, you know what? I'm really thankful to talk to another person that isn't my husband today. And other times we talked about, you know, in Mental Health Awareness Week, we got into very big conversations around everything to do with our perinatal mental health. Mm-hmm. We've gotten into everything around childbirth, birthing complications. We've watched one of the babies, the beautiful baby on last week, who came on when she was 10 days old to begin with. And yeah, we've watched her until she's now about to be introduced solids. So that's her entire little lifetime. We've watched this little tots grow up. And yeah, now this conversation place, which is, and I never expected it to happen, right? It's this peer support, and there's an honesty to it, but there's also such a level of respect that I didn't think that could happen down somebody's screens, that these all of these women and men, you know, we've got some of the dads popping in every now and again as well, and they'll bob by and they'll have a chat.
Yeah.
And it's the respect piece, because there's a really diverse group of people, come on, and some days it's 3 people, and some of the days there was nearly 26 of us on the call. And it's that availability again. This was the whole thing of it, that we can sit and we can ensure that yeah, that's supposed to be happening, or no, that you might need to go to your GP for that, because that's, you know, whether that's to do with the mother or the baby.
So how does it actually work? So who's there? How do you get into the group?
Yeah.
Do you come with your question, or how does that?
So it's not really set up as a come and I'll answer everything and fix everything. I am proposing it as I facilitate peer-to-peer conversation, Alex. So if you've ever been to a mum and baby morning of any sort, or a class of any sort, you know that conversation that happens after the class? If you go to yoga, you go to Gymboree, you go to baby library, you go to Quidju, you go to friends breastfeeding, you go wherever you go. And then there's this conversation that happens amongst the parents or the care providers, grannies or whoever is there with baby. That's the piece that I was really felt was missing in our lives once we went into lockdown, that there was no one there to acknowledge what's normal, what's not normal. So what happens generally week to week is we'll come in and we do a round robin that everyone gets to introduce themselves. And with that introduction, conversations happen. And then there's always the quieter one that sits to the side of the call. And like in a on-site, on-the-ground peer support group, it's my job to invite that person in. So, hey, Sarah, okay, would you like to tell us about you? Because there will always be the person who talks and talks and talks. And then, so it's about facilitating that peer group. It's not me talking all the time. It's about me offering the conversation through the group, and that the mums will come in and the dads will come in with their questions and the peer group will answer. Now, my role in the job is to ensure that it's current evidence-based information and to invite everybody along into the group. It's a group of people coming together to have a chat virtually. Now, if there's very heavy stuff coming up, I'll always offer in the email. So how you join is you send me an email or a private message on Instagram or a message on Facebook or, you know, a text message or whatever. So somebody will send me a message and say, I'd like to come. They might see it on Instagram. They might see it on Facebook, or they might hear about it from their pal. And then I'll send them back the Zoom link. And then what I've done last week, I mixed it up a little bit. I had a private Facebook group that I started about a year ago called Your Virtual Village. So what the intention is there is to enliven that now and to have everybody go in and join there. And I'll pop the Zoom link in there each week. And then the conversation topics that come up.
Yeah, so you know what's coming up.
Yeah, but now I've got a thread on that closed Facebook group. And so the conversation can continue. And so things like I'll be posting in there for the other resources that are available. So where else is available? You asked me there. So the IBCLCs, they pretty quickly, some of them moved online, some people weren't. And we have to remember that everyone who's doing this work also has their own set of circumstances and their own families.
Yeah.
So for instance, you know, I know one IBCLC who has a very elderly father who is quite unwell. And so when the in-home support was able to continue, they decided not to go back into people's homes. And I know doulas the same.
If they
choose their client, then they can't see the family member. It's a tricky thing to balance and get it correctly. But I think there are enough of us available, either online or in person right now, depending, that you can access the people. So there's the IBCLCs online doing telehealth. There's Friends Breastfeeding doing their online groups. There's the National Infertility Support Group have moved online. There is Aware have groups online. There's Quidju are online, you know, all of the groups that you might access support from, most of them have at this point now transitioned to some form of online support or contact, which, you know, and like that, it takes a bit of learning and practice, because we don't all in our lives, we turn up at your front door, we ring your doorbell and we go in and we have a conversation and we might then follow up with links to the great places. But we, you know, we're not all of us naturally sitting in front of a computer every day and doing, you know, things like we had to figure out, like there was these hilarious absolute mess ups down in my kitchen between my kitchen, our sitting room upstairs and four of my mates' houses, trying to figure out the tech to get the virtual coffee morning to be not completely a disaster, right?
Oh yeah, look, I mean, it's been a total learning curve for everyone, and the virtual coffee morning is like, what a jewel to come out of it. Or how is your line of work adapted in other ways, like what the day-to-day of even postpartum doula care?
Since we've gone into lockdown, I've taken one client on face-to-face in-home support. You know, it's not only me, if I take on a full client right now, I then don't get to see my parents because of their circumstances, right?
Sure, yeah.
And so I moved my work to online and to virtual. And so we set up these appointments and we have a virtual conversation in front of our computers. And it's really interesting, because what it has shown to me is it's absolutely about the emotional support. Because whilst I can answer the bits and bobs of, what do you think about this? But like, I don't ever give somebody the answer.
Sure.
We give us an array of options of what might work and signpost to places that might be useful and beneficial. Mm. And so the real response right now has been the emotional piece. And a lot of it, Alex, is to do, again, coming back to how these birth experiences changed pretty quickly from this is what I'm expecting to this is what happened, and even there was a girl, one of the girls on the coffee morning on Friday, and it really opened up a very valid conversation. Two of the women had had their babies in March and April. And there was a huge acknowledgement from them on Friday to their anger. And that's fine, because that's what they felt. And then, like that, one of the women said, you know, can I do a one-on-one with you afterwards for a debrief? Because I don't think this is the right space for it.
Yeah.
You know, so again, that training, that trauma-informed care.
Was really good call for you, because you're then equipped to manage the absolute tsunami and avalanche of emotional support that you were going to have to get into, which of course you were used to doing, but not to the same volume in comparison.
Yeah, and it's really different, because like the virtual world is quite different in its support work. Because so when you're bedside, if you remember back to when you had your baby and you're sitting there, there's a lot of space, there's a lot of work happens with quiet conversation. And by that I mean no conversation. A person could be sitting there in their bed, or their partner in their bed, and it can be the quiet acknowledgement of that's how you're feeling. Yeah. And over an internet call, because it is a call and it's a conversation, there's not as much space for those quiet moments where a huge amount of work can be done. And you have to be really cognizant of that and allow your client the ability to have that quiet. Because on a call, we want to fill the space, right? We want to have the conversation. But actually, you need to take also, I found I've needed to take my skills that I work with in home of the quiet, active listening, non-conversation moments, and transfer that down a virtual call, which has proven quite difficult to do to get it right, because that silence is quite awkward if it's not the correct moment for it, you know?
Do you miss any of the old ways? And I mean the old ways, like the pre-March.
Now, I am a very tactile person, and I let everybody know that. You know how reassuring it can be for somebody simply to place their hand on your elbow, at your knee, on your shoulder, and that very gentle positioning of watching somebody, like really watching somebody in front of you, become so empowered in their parenting, in their postpartum, that you don't get access to that, because a postpartum shift would usually be a minimum of about 4 hours. And virtually, you just couldn't sustain a four-hour conversation online. Because in a regular postpartum shift, you'd be going in, you'd be having a conversation about what happened yesterday or the day before since you'd been there. And then you would, you know, disentangle anything that needed, any information that needed to be given, or, you know, what happened, or, you know, tricky with baby or yourself. And then, like, oftentimes I'd go off, and whilst that's happening, the mom might be in the shower, or the partner might be in the shower or in a bath, and I might make some food and make some dinner and change clothes and, you know, tidy over the kitchen, what have you. And in those quiet moments as well, in the kitchen, getting to talk with partners, checking in with them, that often happens side by side when, you know, you're chopping veggies or stuff like that. You know, a postpartum doula is there for the entire family, and that can be missing now as well. You know, checking in with the partners, making sure, how are they doing? Yeah. And so you lose that piece when you're doing a virtual call.
We made some reference to women and families who have gone through experiences of loss through stillborn or a miscarriage or abortion, people in their fertility treatment journeys as well.
Yeah.
Imagine this group are feeling massively lost and very lonely. So I would love for us to talk a little bit about how important it is for these women to take care of themselves. I feel like it's something that we don't talk about. And I worry that because we don't talk about it, women feel like they shouldn't take special care of themselves, that they are expected to just, you know, get on with it. And I know that's just even a phrase that I'm tired of hearing myself say, to get on with it. But when your body physically goes through something like that, it's really important to take care of it. And while you might not be on a healthcare, a hospital or your GP's priority list, you know, it is still very important that you take care of your body and your mind as you navigate through a phase like that.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Who's available to those women and those groups in terms of support?
To answer who is available, all of the groups that would usually be signposted to in terms of loss and bereavement in Ireland have moved their supports online to virtual meets. Now, going at the best of times, going into a room is hard. Going onto a computer screen to talk about that is really, really hard. It's harder again. You know, there's so much to it. And absolutely, Alex, I 100% agree with you that it is not just get on with it. You know, Felacon is one of the organizations that supports around miscarriage and stillborn babies. And they talk about the tears that are never shed or will the hardest be felt. And in that sentence, I always feel it's the acknowledgement of it, you know, of the loss. And everybody deals with it differently, you know, everybody does. And it's really about, as a person who supports people in loss and bereavement and stillbirth and miscarriage and abortion, it's about acknowledging how the person is feeling and their language and reflecting that back. Miscarriage is one of the biggest remaining taboos, along with stillborn babies and abortion in Ireland. We don't speak about it enough. I 100% agree with you, because the statistics are quite shocking, right? It's 1 in 4 known pregnancies result in miscarriage.
Yeah.
And so if you think about that, now the word there as well that we really need to look at is the known piece, because not everyone has yet acknowledged that they have been pregnant. And some people might think they're having a heavy period. And sometimes that might be what a miscarriage looks like for you. Yeah. And for other people, it can be quite more physical and it can be quite more intense than a heavy period. It reflects each person's regular menstrual cycle and how they move through that, mostly. Mm. Like I spoke to earlier, like even just hearing that news and being in that room by yourself for the scan and to have the sonographer say those words without a partner there beside you, and quite different from somebody who's actively choosing to have a baby alone. You know, again, these are experiences that have been taken away from families to share together, and those moments of grief that will, again, comes back to offering people spaces to listen. And there are brilliant counselling services in Ireland. You know, if anybody needs anybody, get in touch with me. I have a great database and reference book of people who are exceptional in this work. It's really important to acknowledge and to say as well, Alex, I'm not a trained or licensed counsellor or a psychotherapist or a physiotherapist. I am a doula. I am a non-medically trained support person professional. Mm-hmm. So I am trained in active listening, but, you know, like that, like the breastfeeding work, where it gets outside of my scope of practice, immediately I will be telling the client that this is outside of my scope and signposting to the people. The other thing to really acknowledge at the moment is where you said about abortion there. If you think for a moment that we still have people needing to travel in this country to access abortion, that was all taken away when we couldn't leave the country. And, you know, there's a couple of things to it. If you think about our provision in the wait requirements from 3 days from going into your doctor at the first instance to get the pills, if you go in and you get the pills and the pills don't work and you're on the cusp of your 12-week waiting period, you then won't be given the next set of pills.
Yeah.
Now, again, the support networks are there. There was, you know, really positive things came out of this. There's the Abortion Support Network are incredible. They're the organization through in the UK who will get huge amount of funding and charity funding and donations to support people to access to travel, which it's a whole other conversation to get into the debating around the legislation and how poor it is relative to securing full health care for our pregnant people in Ireland. I think that's a whole other week's conversation. And, you know, and like that, even things like
yeah.
You know, in supporting people around their abortions, people not knowing the information. So knowing when to take these tablets, if it's the medical care that you're being given the tablets, and thankfully they move to telehealth and you're able to go and pick up the tablets and do it yourself at home. But again, like that, and the same with miscarriage, knowing as a doula, knowing the signs and signals of a safe and healthy miscarriage, although it sounds peculiar. And the same as a safe and healthy abortion when somebody might need to go to hospital, what these signals and signposts are, and then to help them dismantle the feelings of what they're they're feeling post the event, because like that, it's not just get up and carry on for everybody, and it can impact people really, really differently. And again, you know, the same stillborn babies, parents of stillborn babies, even that accessing, if you think about it, accessing the arrangements for if they wanted to have a memorial service in the height of the pandemic, the impacts, they will be so long felt. But to say that there are places for everybody to go under whatever circumstances they're going through. And if it is, you know, contacting somebody like a postpartum doula will have a reference book as long as their street. You know, it's part of what we do. It's signposting is our bread and butter, you know, ensuring that we have the references for whatever is coming up for people.
Can somebody just touch base with the doula, like online, like through Instagram, and ask these sorts of questions? And
Oh, yeah. From my perspective, I have on my Instagram and on my Facebook page, I have, it's called the Calendly app. So if you want to schedule a session with me, you book in there. There's a couple of questions. I basically am asking, am I the right person for you in my head? And tell me a little bit about yourself.
Okay.
And then
okay.
If it comes in that it's something that's so far out of my scope of practice, I will get back to you pretty soon and say, do you know what? I don't think I'm the person for you. Here's the person to go to. And otherwise, okay. You can book in. It's usually a 90-minute session, because by the time, particularly with the first time, you know, a once-off client.
Your life as it stands right now is about postpartum care and supporting that.
Yeah.
So how do you consider yourself now in terms of the fourth trimester community? Where do you see yourself within the community?
Woven and entangled, I think. Might be some words. I think it's, you know, offering people information to recognizing how powerful your fourth trimester can be.
Yeah.
In terms of families, and when I use the word family, I'm going to talk about the people immediately, if there are the primary caregivers and a baby and or not a baby, right?
Yeah.
So like you were just saying there around miscarriage and stillbirth and abortion, you're still postpartum.
Yes.
The awareness to the profession is growing hugely and exponentially in this country. I think I'm pretty much embedded in it at this point.
Okay, fair enough. Would you recommend any resources, organizations, books, websites, podcasts, etc.? Now, I know you mentioned a few there throughout the recording, but anything in particular, even from pre-COVID times, that you would be recommending frequently to people?
Over and above a postpartum doula.
Yeah, exactly. Apart from an actual human being in your home.
Really though, to answer that question of what you would recommend for everybody, and what I would love to see for the parents of Ireland and the world. You know, when you're booking in to whether it's a home birth or a hospital unit.
Yeah.
Along with that, that every single person had access to postpartum care.
Yeah, big time. What about quick tips and advice? Like, is there something that you say to people, like, always, you're always saying the same thing?
So, you know the way when you're pregnant, Alex?
Yeah.
The things that I would always say is, you know what's going on with your baby and with your body, and then you're going to start planning your birth, and you're going to think about your birth preference probably, and you're going to go to your antenatal class. My number one thing would be, think about your postpartum.
Think yes. about,
even if you don't hire a postpartum doula, try and access somewhere. You know, you plan for a party, you plan for your wedding, you plan for all of these big events in your life. Think about what you might do, like physically, tangibly, how this baby might impact your life. Where are you going to sleep? Who's going to come in? So there is a thing that we often refer to, and it's the same as your birth. It's a postpartum plan. Thinking about these things, asking someone, do they know somebody who can offer you a postpartum plan? I'm sure there's loads on Pinterest and the internet generally. So that would be the number one thing I would think. Remember that there is going to be a baby and how to plan for that in your life. And I'm not just talking about getting the buggy and, you know, the baby grows and the changing bag and stuff like that.
Yeah. But
the actual physicality is in your house and thinking about that. So it's the postpartum plan. And then following on and immediately from that is accessing to your support circle, your village. Who is going to look after you? Who is going to mind you? And who are the people who are going to support you that you expect, but then you need to ask?
Sandy, right? You have to be honest with yourself and say, am I somebody who's going to be able to ask for help? Because if you're not, just reflect on that and reflect on how that might impact you. And I think, you know, I'm not a psychologist and I'm not a doula. No. I'm just, you know, having a go here at podcasting. But I feel like that's something that I can say out loud that I didn't ask myself before. And I think it's an important question to ask. So when, because when you're saying who, maybe there's somebody who can make you some dinners. Yeah, maybe there is. But are you going to be prepared to ask them?
Yeah,
because you might not be, and you might have to get around that in your head a little bit.
Those of us who were having babies a little bit later in life, in our, you know, 30s, 40s, very independent, particularly having your first baby, and you've been along on your career path and you've been doing really well, and you know the answers to everything in your life. And I tell you, the hardest thing you'll ever do is the only time you have to do it is the very first time you put your hand up as an expectant or new parent or bereaved parent and ask for help. And then the other biggest thing I would say for every family to look at bringing a thing into your lives to help in your postpartum immediate and into your future life. It baby wearing is a hugely forgotten skill that is thankfully having a recurrence. Wearing your baby, it does a number of things. It keeps your baby close. It regulates your mood. It regulates temperatures. It increases your oxytocin and your love hormone. The same for partners, you know. And it also gives you hands-free as well. And it does all of these beautiful things. But you don't have to be spending hundreds to act. You can get really good sling for 40 quid.
Totally.
And Trisha over in Snugglebugs or Jill down in Mummy Hub, the two girls, they're given virtual consults at the minute. Get your sling and be shown how to use it properly.
It also helps you physically wear it proper and carry the weight of the baby properly as well.
So your load wearing is correctly,
Yeah. When we were able to record in studio, I would bring along a little biscuit tin with some words in it.
Okay.
And people would just pick out the word. So instead of doing the biscuit tin, I just like think of a word in my head and say it.
Oh, nice and random.
Because obviously we don't have it yet. Totally random. But for me and you, maybe you would like to expand a little bit on newborn babies.
Magic. That's the word. It is simply the most amazing thing. How a baby is born, how a woman's body, and I have used the word woman, I am fully inclusive in my practice. How the female body is set up to grow and nurture internally. We grow a whole new organ to provide for this baby whilst it's in utero. For the many of us, many people, not all, our pelvis then shifts and this baby comes out this birth canal. And a baby, newborn baby, can be set on a birthing person's tummy and will, by smell and sight alone, crawl up to that birthing person's breast, chest, and start to root and start to feed. And it's just incredible. I don't think if you took all the most brilliant engineers and people from science in the world and put them together, they could come up with what it is that this dyad is capable of doing together. Just incredible.
Before we go, I would love for you to sign off with a quick recap of where people can find you.
So I have a couple of ways to be found. I am currently rebuilding my website, so it's down at the moment. And then other than that, you can find me on Instagram at Sandy Doula, SandyDoula. And I'm over on Facebook as Sandy Doula also. You can get me on email, sandyconnolly@gmail.com, or my phone number, 086-043-8642.
Are you sure you want me to include that phone number?
Yeah, it's fine. Okay. It's full access. If I don't answer, I will call you back. I love what I do, Alex, and it doesn't infringe on my life. And in fact, it absolutely it makes my life better to get to be invited into these people's lives. And I hold that with such a huge level of respect and with the privilege that it deserves and the honor that it deserves, because it's the most special time in family's life.
Sandy, I just want to say thank you so much for all your dedication and your commitment to the community, especially in the last 7 months, and everything that you're doing, the virtual coffee mornings, the Instagram posts, everything, and just, you know, your constant support to everyone. You know, the work that you're doing is shining a massive light across the country. So well done.
Oh, wow,
you, and thank you so much for all the work that you do.
Oh, thank you.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Here's a question for the marketers listening. Want to find that perfect customer beyond the world of scrolling, swiping, and searching? Here's a secret to make sparks fly. Smooth talking with podcast ads. With Acast, you can reach millions of listeners who'll be hanging on your every word. On the train to work, in the gym, or waiting in line for coffee. Start up the conversation with podcast listeners anywhere and everywhere. And they're looking for love. 60% of listeners have a higher trust in brands they've met on podcasts compared to social. Get closer to your audience. Make podcast ads with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.